All right, so we have five. So let's get going.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hi, Charmaine.
Hi, Charmaine.
We'll start off with approval of the June 9th meeting minutes, if everybody could take a look.
I'll move to approve.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, then on to the August 11th minutes.
Move to approve.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
On to public comments. Anything? Okay, on to chairman's comments. I just thank everybody for coming and being diligent about hanging in there. We should have a good discussion today with school opening. And hang in there. We will get through this, all of it. Jen, your report?
Great, thank you. Well, first of all, I just wanted to introduce Mr. Charmaine Harris. He's your newest member. We're very excited because there was, and Charmaine, I hope that I can put you on the spot and let you speak in just a second. It was a strong push. I know we talked about in December and January of bringing in members that A, reflect the diversity of the community, and B, as statutorily required, and B, to bring in people with more from the social determinants of health to be able to bring that perspective to our Board of Health. And so Charmaine fits both of those nicely. It was an appointment from the county executive and it passed through the county board at the last meeting. So this is his first meeting, and welcome, Charmaine, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you all having me. It's an honor to be a part of this. As you know, for the past 5 years, I've been working with the Kenosha, the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency, specifically the WIC office. Running a fatherhood program. And I always talk about how we, in the beginning, got a grant from the maternal child health grant, and the focus was infant mortality. And so we tied in how we could get education to the fathers and mothers to help decrease those numbers. And when I just started going through the research and saw the numbers of infant mortality, they compared it to third world countries. I knew I had to do something. So when Jen came with the opportunity to join the Kenosha County Board of Health, and I had an opportunity to use my voice and speak up on certain matters, I jumped on it. I'm a recent graduate from Carthage. I finished last Thursday. So I just got my email today that I can come pick up my diploma.
Congratulations.
I jumped right into my master's.
That's great.
Right after that, I jumped into my master's degree, so I'm back in school now. So I was doing a little reading. That's what made me late to the meeting. But I'm a big part of the community, connected with different organizations, Urban League, Kenosha Unity Coalition, NAACP, Expo out in Milwaukee, Ex-Prisoners Organizing, Tush. Just, I'm heavily involved. So any knowledge that I can bring to the table, any words of wisdom, any type of connections I can make, please feel free to ask me. I'm all about connecting different groups and making sure we're sharing resources, intellectual resources as well.
Thank you, Charmaine. We are so excited to have you here.
Mm-hmm.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Yep.
Any questions for Charmaine? Well, we have him on the spot.
Jen, do you want us to do a little introduction so he knows who we are?
That would be great.
And one last thing before that. I also branched out into my own business now. And so I'll be partnering with probation and parole and possibly child support to continue my fatherhood program through my business. And so I'll have that audience of fathers to get this information to and share information coming from them with you all.
Great. So I'm Diane Gerlach. I'm a pediatrician with Aurora.
Hey, Diane.
I am board chair currently. Yep. And have been on the board for a number of years. And I'm always trying to get people more involved. I may nab you to try and get involved with the on the state level with Board of Health. And I'm also on the national level with Board of Health. So,
awesome.
John, you're up next on the list.
Hi, Charmaine. John O'Day. I'm the county board chairman currently. Been on county board since 96. Been on the health department board, I think, since 96. Maybe sooner. I can't remember. It's been so long. Thank you.
Julia.
Hi there. I'm Julia Robinson, and I was the...
Lost you.
You're muted.
MSW and was the clinical director of the psych unit down in Illinois before we moved to Kenosha. And then I became the alderman for the Columbus Park area, and I was an alderman for 10 years before I retired from politics. So welcome.
Oh, okay. Seven districts?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Maggie on the phone.
Hi, Charmaine. This is Dr. Maggie Regner. I'm a lifelong Kenosha resident. Been practicing veterinary medicine for 22 years. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
And Mark is on the phone.
Yes, I am on the phone. I'm Mark Nagari. Been involved in the community a long time, former county board, former alderman, and on several county committees as a citizen member. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Back to Jen.
All right. If I could have everybody just mute, if that's okay, because I hear a lot of feedback. Unless you have a question, then of course speak up. So on to the board bylaws. So just to recap for anybody that's new on the phone, the bylaws had not been updated since I think it was 96. So we needed to modernize them and make them align with current state statute. So that was key point number one. And then we also wanted to make sure that we looked at the future direction of the Board of Health and where we were going, much more in a stronger advisory capacity than the board was utilized before. And also making sure we bring in health equity and the social determinants of health to help the health department moving into that broader population health focus perspective. So the bylaws, this crew had gone through line item by line item with John Moyer, and a new version was drafted. It went to the Human Service Committee and was delayed one round because they wanted to see a side-by-side comparison of the changes. So I quickly threw together an Excel spreadsheet that listed the old bylaws and what aligns with the new bylaws and all the things that were added, such as ethics, open meetings laws. Those were the two big things that were added that weren't reflected in the old bylaws. So the Human Service Committee saw that. They then passed our bylaws through that committee, and they said that that line item by line item with the Excel spreadsheet was one of the best comparisons they'd ever seen, and they're going to use that as their standard going forward to see changes amongst documents that they approve. Then it went on to county board, and they didn't receive that Excel document until the day of or the day before the meeting. So people, I don't think, had time to process what those changes were between the old bylaws and the new bylaws. And so it got held until the next meeting, which is the 15th. So a couple of the comments that they had was largely surrounding they didn't understand social determinants of health. There was a comment made, why are we getting rid of the MDs? And we said, we're not getting rid of MDs, but we also need to open up with vacancies to people that represent other social determinants of health and other backgrounds. So they were concerned about the level of education is what one comment was within the Board of Health. They were also concerned about why we were removing a dentist as a required position. I think it just took a little bit more that they needed to be educated that the health department doesn't really operate in the dental world or the veterinarian world, as an old version had said we should have a veterinarian on our board. So I think right now what's happening is a lot more of that education. Hopefully they'll come back on the 15th and we'll have had time to review the new proposed bylaws and we'll hopefully pass that. We have one other vacancy that we cannot fill until those bylaws are passed. So we are sitting at 8 members right now, and hopefully we can fill that vacancy. The county exec has put forth the name for that vacancy. And so that after the bylaws get passed, we'll then be able to go back through the Human Service Committee and the county board. So we won't get that person probably filled until December, by the time it goes through all of those after the bylaws get passed. So that's where we're sitting right now. We don't have new official bylaws that we can operate under at this point, and hopefully we can have that passed. And John, I'm going to look at you because you were at that last county board meeting, if there's anything I missed or that you think we should add.
No, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I think when they get stuff at the last minute and it was a big spreadsheet kind of thing, they obviously didn't have enough time to really absorb it. So they just kick it back. It's become kind of a normal practice, but you know, timing is everything, and it just was one of those things that took a lot to put together.
So, and thank you. I know you'll be able to represent us on the 15th and help to clear up any of the misconceptions. So
I think so, and I think Laura Belsky's chairman of the Human Services will do a good job again. As long as the committee or the board gets the stuff early enough to absorb it, and they have it at it now, we might resend it so that they have another kick at the cat, motors, so to speak. Okay.
Yep, I did ask John Jansen to speak with Laura today and make sure that she resends it, so they have another week to make sure that they review it.
Right, because she's got a meeting, I think, Wednesday or Thursday this week.
Yep.
So
Thursday, okay. Yep. Thank so you. I'm hoping that we can get that through so we have a full board to start out 2021 with. So then, you know, I would also like to see in early 2021, when we have the new bylaws and we have our new members, that we do a little bit more with regard to orientation for Charmaine and the new member, and some strategic visioning for the board as a whole, looking at new mission, vision, goals and objectives and how we want to move forward. I know with COVID that sort of delayed everything, and then the bylaws and new members. So 2021 will be a good year. So we'll work out all the kinks in the meantime. All right, COVID update. So where we sit right now is that we're still relatively low as far as positive cases. However, if we're looking at a pattern, we had April and May where we had sort of a peak. We had 3 to 4 weeks in June that were decreased, and then we spiked up in July even higher. If we can make a pattern from two spikes, we're what we're predicting in the 3 to 4 week reprieve right now. But as you know, with school starting and people coming back to colleges, we are preparing for things to explode by the end of September. So with our staff trying to figure out how we're going to be able to manage that, hiring 8 new disease investigators, 6 new contact tracers, we'll be able to add to our capacity that way. The state epidemiologist put out some new flexible guidelines that being that we cannot contain COVID any longer, it's so wide community spread. The state health department was still operating on a containment model, and local health departments have clearly moved to a mitigation model. So being that we cannot contain it, we're going to try to mitigate harm, reduce harm and mitigate the spread. So that, I think we got buy-in from the state health department. We'll be moving down that path, which could mean that we're not able to fully contact trace everybody potentially if we start really getting a lot of cases. For example, I know in Madison, with college being back, they went from about 20 to 30 positive cases a day, now up to 150 a day. So, and that's just with the colleges largely being back in, because as you know, their K-12 schools are not. So we're really just watching the numbers. We're meeting every single morning. We have all of our schools on a brand new, actually, I shouldn't say it's brand new, on an amended surveillance system. So since H1N1 in 2009, all of our schools, east and west of the I, would enter in the number of absent per day and the number of students that should be at school. So we had the numerator and the denominator. It was just a quick and easy, it's a county website. They all had a password too, and they would go and fill that in daily. And most schools have been doing that since 2009. If there was ever a time we needed more data, it's right now. So we talked to all the schools in the entire county, and we said, all the districts and schools, we said, we really need to have better data. So now that surveillance system has all symptoms of COVID, it has staff broken out from students, so we can see the number of staff. We can also look at the number of substitute teachers and how they're staffing in-person sessions. And it also has broken out because schools still have to take attendance for those in virtual environments. So we have it broken out, the numerator and denominator, for both an in-person and a virtual environment, so we can get a complete picture of what's going on with the schools. So it's not a foolproof system. Obviously, it could be riddled with errors, but it's going to produce, as long as they comply, more data so that we can see if something is going on just in a school or just in a district, or is it part of a broader community spread or some issue that's going on, and we'll be able to compare apples to apples. Because up to this point, it's been largely, we've done whole county data and statistics, and now we'll be able to piece it out with schools being back together, as well as how we have done businesses. So we're still following up with businesses 100%. We certainly get a number of complaints from the public about this business isn't wearing masks or that business, and follow up with every single one of those with high recommendations to try to gain compliance. And largely people do change their ways once we come in as the health department to sort of say, this is how you can keep your employees safe, how you can keep your customers safe. We're still following up with 100% of our disease investigations and contacts. So we're able to maintain that as of right now. We're just sort of preparing for the end of September when things could grow well beyond our capacity. And that's where that state epidemiologist flexible scale comes into play to say, you don't have to do everything in the best practice public health model that we would do if we were dealing with measles or tuberculosis or those sorts of things, that because this is such a different disease now and it's so widespread throughout the community. So that's where we sit today. We're maintaining the status quo, rewriting some of our processes and plans, doing some quality improvement. We're also really keeping up on the latest research as far as antigen testing, mass vaccination, when vaccine is, and working with our long-term care facilities, skilled nursing facilities weekly. So still working largely with several of the community agencies, but as of late, every free moment has gone to schools and helping the schools. We've been getting them PPE, doing walkthroughs to determine their isolation rooms for their 6 students, reviewing their plans and protocols, reviewing letters that they're sending home to parents. We have had some positives in some schools, and we have been helping them with what the quarantine guidelines are, how they should, you know, send letters out to their school community as a whole, and then how they should alert their close contacts of the positives. And so we're spending a lot of time basically hand-holding them through the process and making sure that they understand their role. And so it's brand new for every school, and especially as they start coming back online or face-to-face, we expect that the next month will be very time intensive with the schools until they sort of get the pattern and the routine going down for how we handle positives within their 4 walls. So that's a brief update on COVID. Do you have any questions?
We have
been greatly enhancing the County Hub website. So we're being more and more transparent, adding more charts and graphs out there. And we're still sending our every Tuesday sit rep to all of our partners. I'm sorry, Charmaine, did you have a question?
I was going to ask, with Wilson and Frank, has there been any data updated from them yet? Or did you say that already?
So those are our 2 schools that are year round. And we are in fact still working with them very closely. I don't have the data in front of me as far as those 2 schools, if they've had any positives, but we are working with them as well on their immunization rates, because we are certainly now gearing up for flu shots and how we're going to, those are our 2 schools that traditionally have lower immunization rates. So we're doing heavy one-on-one outreach to those families that are not compliant with immunizations to really get them up to speed, planning mobile immunization clinics in their neighborhoods and in their school parking lots. And so a lot of our communicable disease staff is also being pulled into this to try to help those two schools.
Okay.
Aurora is going to be doing mobile flu clinics, free flu in some of the community areas.
And I don't think I've seen, if they have a calendar or maybe a link to something, Dr. Gerlach, that would be great to add to the County Hub website, because just we have the COVID testing sites as one link on our, so we constantly are keeping that updated. We just added the Racine open community testing site to our site, just in case people want to drive up to Racine to get COVID testing. I think we need to add that immunization testing as well to flu shot clinics and that sort of thing as a new link in there. So County Hub website is constantly being updated. So that would be great.
Did you want to talk about your guidance document?
Yes, I would. Thank you. So one of the things 2 weeks ago, or is it 3 weeks ago now, the State Health Department and DPI, we had been waiting for 7 weeks. They were to release a framework that would help local health departments with making decisions and determinations for when a school should open and close. 7 weeks, we were told it was coming, and it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. They said, it won't be coming. For whatever the reason, they had determined that that was a decision best made at the local level. Health officers around the state disagreed, because that does pit local against local, school district against school district. It makes it a much more political issue. And it also leaves a void as far as I may be implementing something that Racine is doing totally different. So it creates that patchwork quilt across the state of who's determining what factors to open or close a school. So in that void, our health department worked quickly to develop a framework for what metrics we would be looking at in order to make that determination of opening or closing schools. Now, granted, all of our schools are opening in some large capacity face-to-face this fall. KUSD is 57% face-to-face and 42% virtual. Every school has different numbers to that. So we needed a framework that was flexible and allowed us, nothing within it is, you know, hard and fast, this is when you close, this is when you open. And I think that's hard for people, because people want that, you know, you heard in Milwaukee, 3%. If you have 3% COVID, you're shut down. We didn't want to be that prescriptive on purpose, because we wanted to have that conversation with the schools or the district administrators to say from both sides. If we, as we're looking at the data every morning, and we have about 40 different data metrics we're looking at every day to sort of see what's working, what's not. We wanted to have that conversation with them to say, hey, we see that you're having an outbreak. We're having trouble containing it using our public health tools. How are you doing with it? And have that dialogue. And it might come vice versa, where the school is calling us and saying, I can't get substitutes in here. My staff is not coming in. They're all staying home, or they're quarantined or sick. Please shut us down. So that the dialogue could happen from both the health department side and the school side. And what you had previously seen was a list of metrics and things that we'll be looking at in order to base those decisions on, so that it's not a subjective decision, so that it's a much more concrete, sound discussion based upon the metrics that we're seeing. And of course, it depends largely on their importing data into the surveillance system. So I just wanted to make sure, Dr. Gerlach, I know you had some questions, and we can address those too, if you would like. And I wanted to run that by you. I was hoping to get that approved by the Board of Health, if you so deem that it's a good enough framework for our schools. And let me just pull up those questions, because I can answer those along with some of the rest of you may have similar questions. Sorry, let me just pull that up here. All right, the first question was on how is county burden calculated? And that is calculated using new positive cases per 100,000 in the population, but it's based upon a 7-day rolling average. So sometimes we look at a 14-day general average, sometimes we look at a 7-day rolling average. You know, as with any science, you can slice it and dice it any way, but for this particular burden rate, the 7-day rolling average seems to be the most accurate, especially for this, for COVID. So that was the answer to that one. The second question was, percent positive results tend to vary. And yes, they vary widely. So for example, when Aurora had closed down their testing site, both Fredart South and our community health center testing sites almost doubled to make up some of the what was lacking from the Aurora testing site. At the same time, our testing has been greatly down these last 2 weeks. Could it be the dog days of summer? Could it be people doing a last minute vacation? Or could it be all of the unrest in Kenosha that COVID fell to the wayside? It could be all of the above. So our testing is greatly down right now, which is leading to a high percent positive rate. Now, we obviously we're looking at 30 to 40 different metrics every single day, and percent positive is but one of those. It's not one that you want to put a whole lot of stock into, because it all is dependent upon the number of testing that we see in the county. So there is a caveat with percent positive there. So it is one of the metrics we look at. We certainly tie it into everything else, and our percent positive rate is in the 20s right now. It's very high. So that's not good, but we take into account that it's because testing is really low right now. And like I mentioned last time, I am concerned that our testing requests will explode as well by the end of September. For every student that's positive in a classroom, you can bet all those other 30 families are going to want themselves and their student and their entire families tested. So we do expect a high pull on the testing system. I had put in for 2 more National Guard open community testing sites, and I have not heard word back. They're being very judicious about who they choose to grant permission to with the National Guard. And so that's a little bit scary right now, that we don't have the testing capacity that we know we need in Kenosha County. And based upon a Harvard algorithm we're still going by, I need to see 257 tests done per day on a consistent basis in Kenosha County to really be able to see where the virus is moving within the county. And I think we've maybe only hit above 257 a dozen times since the beginning of COVID. So we have never consistently been above the rate that I would like to see with testing. So, and that has to do with community compliance too. So it's not just a, you know, the healthcare systems or you know, that it's any fault of anyone.
What was the rate you'd like to see? I didn't hear that.
So
257
tests being run per day on a consistent basis. So not just like today. So that we can get much more testing. But of course, there's still a critical shortage with testing the reagent. So collection kit supplies. National Guard obviously is from 40 teams down to 11. So across the state, this is not just a unique Kenosha County issue. There's a testing capacity and resource concern.
Jen, one concern that I have is there really isn't a good knowledge of best timing of the test. Because, I mean, you could be exposed 3 days ago, get tested today and be negative and be positive tomorrow.
Yep. So we tell everybody when we're talking to positives and we say, hey, for all of your household members, have them wait at least till the day 5 or day 7. In fact, we try heavily to push day 10 through day 14. CDC obviously suggests, and DPI, I believe in Wisconsin, suggests waiting till day 14. Now that's harder, so we give more of a window day 10 to 14, but definitely we tell people do not go get tested before day 5. And knowing and that education still needs to happen out there, that if you get tested on day 5 or day 7 or day 10 and you're negative, you could still become positive on day 14. So we have over a 50% rate in Kenosha County of people that got tested and went back to work. And by the time we get the lab results back 3-4 days later, they've been working while infectious. And that is a huge percentage of our positives right now, is that they went back to work because they weren't really feeling much of anything or they had real mild symptoms. So people are definitely going back to work while positive before they get their lab results. And now they've just been working while infectious. So it's an issue. So all of the testing sites, I know, are telling people go home and stay home until you get your lab results, and the community's not doing it. So it is an issue.
Is that something that is because the work is not allowing them to take time off unless they have a positive test? Or is that an economic issue of, I need the money? Do we have any idea what the rationale is as to why they're going back to work?
We hear it, where you just said, or we hear, and it's all of the above. So we hear every story, every scenario. So it's a little bit of both of those situations you said and more.
One other question I just had, last time when we had a meeting, you said that we were at about a 15%, what I will call falsehood rate, where our contact tracers and our disease investigators were talking to people, and we had about 15% of people who were simply non-compliant or actually did not tell all of the people with whom they are in contact or where they worked or whatever. Is that continuing to be that high, or have the education and the various things that we've done to try to explain why it's important that people cooperate with the health department, has that improved anything?
No, in fact, we've been hovering around a 20% rate of non-compliance. And it's funny because we've been asking people just for our own awareness, and they're willing to tell us why they won't tell us, but they still won't tell us. So they are, we've been trying to get at what is the root cause? What is the root cause, and how can we do this better? And it's just a whole myriad of reasons, still stigma, not wanting the public to know, you know, fear of government, you know, not caring, you know, I just don't care. So I'm not going to waste my time to give you all the names of everybody I've been in contact with. I mean, we get the gamut of rationale. So yeah, we've been hovering around a 20% non-compliance rate, pretty steady. Yeah. So, and that's where it's just, we just have to accept it's community spread. We can't contain it anymore. It's out there. The culture, the climate of this virus has changed. So it, we have to change with it. So yes, the framework, back to the questions. There were two more quick questions under school metrics. Will contact tracing track the impact on staff? It's going to be near impossible, and this is a hard thing to sort of convey to the public. We may not always know numbers of people that have been contact traced, A, because of the non-compliance rate. We constantly are getting people saying, oh, I already texted all my football team members. You know, I don't need to give you their names. I already told them they're all quarantined. So we have members of the public quarantining each other, and it's very difficult to track that. Now, granted, we're hoping with the school surveillance system we'll help to get better numbers, because if I'm calling in my son because he was quarantined by another friend of his who was positive on the sports team, I have to say he's not going to be in school today because he's quarantined. So we're hoping that through that school surveillance we'll get better data and metrics on that, but it will be near impossible to get accurate data on the number of people quarantined through contact tracing for many issues, that being one of them. And the last question was, and this is for all schools across the county, not just KUSD. And we've been working with all of them. We've been on weekly 2-hour phone calls with every school district administrator, reviewing plans. I mean, we've had a heavy amount of communication with all of our schools across the county. So that is, any other questions on the framework?
Are the hospitalizations due to COVID down? And I ask that because people may look at it like, may not take things serious if they don't see people going to the hospital or the symptoms being so aggressive as they were when the COVID first started coming around.
You're spot on. So the hospitalizations are down. We saw last week a tiny, tiny tick up, nowhere near capacity for the hospitals that they could handle. But we did see sort of, they were down to 2 or 3 hospitalizations, you know, a low number, and then they sort of went back up to 6 or 8. They're really hovering low though. So yeah, the symptoms are much less, as far as the number of people that are going to the hospital or need hospitalization with COVID. So you're right, that impacts how society views it. And that is one of the metrics we will continue to look at, is the hospitalization rate.
And then is that like herd immunity? Are people talking about that?
So in order to achieve herd immunity, we need 85% of the population. And for the state of Wisconsin, we're only at 2% herd immunity. So we are nowhere near herd immunity for the state of Wisconsin. So that's why it's just going to be wait for the vaccine.
Yep. Okay.
Good questions, though.
Any other questions or comments?
I'm the public. Can I ask a question? I know public comments were at the beginning.
Okay.
Dr. Schwimmer.
Okay.
All right. How many deaths have there been from COVID since the last Board of Health meeting?
I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't have that teased out since the August 11th meeting.
Okay. How about last week?
I don't have that right in front of me.
I think Kenosha County went up only a couple.
Yeah, it was less than five. It was not many.
I think it was three. I just wanted to get a sense of where we are. State website talks about active investigations and breaks it down by county. How many active investigations are there in long-term care facilities now here?
Dr. Schwimmer, can I interrupt you for just a moment so that we can approve this for the school and then we can go on to your comments?
Okay, thank you very much. No problem.
All right. So can we have a motion to approve this plan for the school?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. All right, so moved. Back to Dr. Schwimmer.
Okay, I just wanted to know what the status was for the long-term care facilities. As I said, the state website lists by county that there's a lot of active investigations. So I just wanted to know, a little bit about where those are.
I don't have the exact numbers right in front of me, but our active investigations have actually gone down in our long-term care facilities, both skilled nursing and assisted living. And, every facility has been amazing and great communication with us as far as mitigating it. They have it down to a good routine now, and it's largely solely amongst staff at this point. Once we removed the order and allowed staff to be able to work at two or more locations or facilities, that obviously brings in an element of risk, but they're still testing every 2 weeks. And they're still collecting, who's at what college classes and who works at Target and this other facility and that other facility. And they're doing all the symptom checking. So.
Very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, Diane, you're muted. So I think.
Any other questions on her updates? Okay, let's move on to corporate counsel.
And John couldn't be on today.
Oh, okay. All right. Any other business? Any other comments? Welcome, Shermaine, and I think we can adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Move to adjourn.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Yep. See you all later.
Bye.
Bye.